Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden age. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Coming up in this hour, sitcoms. Later on, we hear The Colemans on the Halls of Ivy. But right now, comedian Harry McNaughton stars in It's Higgins, Sir. This, the elopement episode, heard on NBC on August 21st, 1951.
No, mister. It's just Higgins, sir.
The National Broadcasting Company presents a new comedy series, It's Higgins, Sir, created and transcribed by Paul Harrison, and starring Harry McNaughton as Higgins. Well, all is quiet and peaceful at the Roberts house this evening. Mrs. Roberts is up in her bedroom sewing. Mr. Roberts missed dinner and is still out on a business appointment. Tommy and Debbie have gone to bed, and Nancy Roberts is entertaining her boyfriend, Pudgy, in the living room. Higgins, the butler, he starts to dust the dining room table, and...
Well, that's that. No need to dust the dining room.
And so Higgins goes on to dust the living room.
My word, it's dark. There's just the light from the fish tank. Miss Nancy and Master Pudgy have stepped out. Well, I can't dust in the dark, so it's on with the lights.
Higgins!
Oh, Miss Nancy, why are you sitting in the dark?
We were just... Oh, Higgins!
Oh, perhaps the bright lights were bothering your eyes.
Yes, yes, that's it. Pudgy and I like to sit in a room with soft lights, don't we, Pudgy?
You don't say. Oh, I say, Master Pudgy, your lip is bleeding.
Higgins, that doesn't happen to be blood. Would you please stop disturbing us?
Oh, of course, Miss Nancy. Very sorry.
Good evening, Higgins.
Good evening, sir.
Where's Mrs. Roberts?
She's in her room, Mr. Roberts.
Oh, good, good. I let you and I go into the living room. Well, the lights are out.
Oh, I wouldn't do that if I were you, sir.
Higgins, you stop it. Oh, Daddy, you.
Hello there, Mr. Roberts. Quite a surprise meeting you here.
Why? I live here.
It seems that Master Pudgy was having trouble with his eyes. He found the little light from the fish tank more soothing.
Well, it should be. He's got fish eyes.
Daddy, you're embarrassing me to death.
Pudgy, I think it's time for you to go home.
It is? Gee, I thought it was early yet.
It's later than you think.
Yeah. Well, good night, Nancy. Good night, Mr. Roberts.
Father, what you just did was perfectly terrible.
There'll be no more sitting in the living room with the lights out.
The light in the fish tank was on, sir.
Nancy is not a guppy.
All we were doing was holding hands.
Well, Pudgy can do that with the lights on. I won't have it, Nancy, and to help you remember, you'll do without the car for a week.
But we need the car. Oh, Daddy, you just don't understand at all. I'm not a child anymore, and I won't be treated like one. Good night!
Huh. Holding hands in the dark. Ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous, sir. It's clever. That way, she doesn't have to see him.
Nephew,
oh, yes, yes, dear. I'm home.
I suppose you had a terribly hard day at the office.
Oh, terrible. And the worst part was this evening.
But you're doing so much night work, dear. I'm sure Mr. Bascom could help you.
No. The boss gave me the job to do, and I'll see it through.
What's he like?
Who?
Your new client. What's he like?
The new client. Oh, he's... Well, actually, I haven't paid too much attention to what he looked like.
Beg pardon, sir, your coat.
What's wrong with my coat?
I'd better brush it off, sir.
But why right now?
Because there's a long blonde hair on it, sir.
A long blonde hair?
Yes, madam, here it is. Oh, I say, that is long.
Blonde hair? Where?
Here you are, sir. Blonde and wavy.
and very, very silky.
Long, blonde, and silky.
Oh, that darn Cocker Spaniel.
Cocker Spaniel?
Yes. One jumped all over me this afternoon.
Oh, my word, sir. A Cocker Spaniel jumped all the way up to your lapel.
Yes, very frisky.
Well, dogs always did like you, dear. I'm going upstairs now. Will you be up soon?
Yes. As soon as I have a little talk with Higgins.
Well, don't you be too long. I want you to tell me more about that blonde Cocker Spaniel. She sounds so cute.
Higgins?
I must dust the living room, sir.
Higgins, about the long, silky blonde hair.
Oh, yes, sir. What would you like me to do with it?
Eat it. And I could kill you for mentioning it.
But, sir, I should think you'd be proud of the attraction you obviously have to Cocker Spaniels.
Higgins, this new client is a woman. A very attractive and very aggressive woman. Miss Armbruster is rich, beautiful, and unmarried.
Oh, I see. She owns the blonde Cocker Spaniel.
No, she is the blonde Cocker Spaniel.
We've got to make the decision to break away from our parents once and for all. Do you love me? Well, don't just sit there with your mouth hanging open. Do you love me?
Why, yeah, sure.
That settles it.
Settles what?
We're going to get married.
Married, us? Gee whiz.
You said you loved me.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with getting married?
We're going away together. We'll elope right now.
But Nancy, I can't elope right now.
Why not?
I promised Dad I'd mow the lawn today.
Are we going to let our parents run our lives, or are we going to do it?
But you're not packed. And I'm not either.
I refuse to take any clothes Daddy bought me. We'll start fresh. We'll buy all new clothes.
Buy all new clothes? Both of us? But Nancy, my allowance.
My mind's made up. Come on, Pudgy. We'll go right down to the city hall and get the license.
You're not going to tell your folks or anything?
Of course. I always tell them where I'm going. Now, let's see. I'll write a note and leave it right here on the radio. Dear Mother, Pudgy and I are...
Do you have to put my name in the note?
Well, sure. Why not?
Well, gee whiz, your mother might get mad at me.
Who cares? We'll borrow Daddy's car and leave right now.
But you told me your father wouldn't let you use it.
Oh, gee, that's right.
Well, I guess we can't elope.
Oh, yes, we can. I'll think of some way to get the keys from Higgins. Oh, Higgins.
Did you call, Miss Nancy? Oh, good morning, Master Pudgy. Talkative gentleman, isn't he?
Higgins, do you have a set of car keys?
Car keys? Yes, I do, Miss Nancy.
Well, Pudgy and I have a very important errand to do, and we'd like to borrow the car.
But, Miss Nancy, you know, your father was very angry last night. He said you went to use the car for a few days.
Well, I know, but what we're going to do is going to keep him from getting mad again. After today, we won't sit in the living room with the lights out anymore.
Oh, I see. Yes, you're going to have Master Pudge's eyes fixed. So that he won't have to sit in the dark.
Yes, that's it. Well, we've got to hurry and get his eyes examined.
Oh, I'm sure your father would approve of this. Here are the keys.
Oh, thank you, Higgins. Thank you very much. Come on, Pudgy. Goodbye, Higgins. Say goodbye, Pudgy.
Sounds like a hyena. Fancy that Pudgy wearing glasses with that porcupine haircut and that mouth hanging open. And those popping eyes. My word, with glasses, he'll look like a flounder.
Well, Miss Armbruster, I'm certainly glad we found all the deed records to your property here at the City Hall.
Yes. Now we can go for that nice car, Robert.
Really, Miss Armbruster?
I've asked you to call me Gloria. I'm just Gloria to you.
Yes. Well, we'll take a cab to my house and pick up my car.
I understand some of my property is right on Lover's Lane.
Yes. That's where all the high school kids go.
I know why they go there, Phil.
Uh, Yes. Well, better call that cab.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Roberts.
Oh, Daddy.
Nancy, what are you doing with our car?
Well, Pudgy and I...
Let's go, Nancy.
Give me the keys. Thank you. Now, who let you have these keys, hmm?
Well, Higgins. We borrowed the car for an errand.
Well, we'll talk about it later. Miss Armbruster, this is my daughter Nancy and her friend Pudgy.
Nancy, why, you darling, you look charming, so young and so terribly attractive.
Yes, well, we'll take the car, Nancy. Here you are, Miss Armbruster.
Thank you.
Goodbye, Nancy.
Oh, now we don't have a car, darn.
Yeah, I guess we can't elope now. Nobody ever eloped walking.
Pudgy, we aren't going to give up this easy.
We're not?
No. If we don't have the car, we'll take a cab.
A cab? But that's expensive. Gosh, a cab, all new clothes, the license. Getting married is going to cost a lot of money. Gee, maybe I ought to go home and mow the lawn before we elope.
What for goodness sake?
Pop pays me $1 for mowing the lawn.
Oh, Higgins.
Yes, madam.
Has Mr. Roberts called about dinner tonight yet?
No, Mrs. Roberts. I haven't heard from him.
I do hope he can make it tonight.
Oh, I'm sure Mr. Roberts does, too.
I'm going upstairs and change.
Very well, madam. My word, look at that clutter on top of the radio. Pencils and papers. Why, this looks like a note. It is a note. It says, let's see here. It says, Dear Mother, Pudgy and I are eloping. How sweet, eloping. Eloping! Eloping, and it's my fault. I gave him the car. I said, that's not cricket. Oh, I've got to stop them at once. I shall call the police immediately. Operator, police headquarters.
Police headquarters?
Hello, are you there?
What are you, a wise guy or something?
Let me talk to the inspector.
What kind, Inspector? Street, traffic, elevator, restaurant, water, sewage, safety, fire, school, election, postal, tax, or garbage?
Oh. You don't understand. None of those. The police inspector.
He's in Washington.
We'll call him back. This is a very urgent matter. I want you police chaps to stop a car. Stop a car immediately. The license number is 23687.
Who are you?
I'm Higgins. I butler for the Roberts family.
You what?
I'm a butler and I butler.
Yeah. Well, it takes all kinds to make a world. Okay, now why do you want us to stop the car?
Well, you'll find a couple in it. You see, they're eloping. And we won't have it. For family and personal reasons, we want them stopped.
Oh, a couple running away to get married, huh? I'll be glad to prevent a disaster like that. Yes, sir, I'm a married man myself.
Oh, yes, quite. Please phone me when you have them safely away in your jail.
Oh, don't you worry, Higgins. Nobody never escapes from this jail. This is the best jail in the county.
How wonderful. I'll recommend it to all my friends.
Miss Armbruster?
Gloria.
Yes. Gloria?
I think you're the sweetest lawyer I ever met.
Yes. I think it's about time we got back.
Oh, silly. What your wife doesn't know won't hurt her.
Yeah, maybe not, but when she finds out, it'll hurt me.
I'm going to sit a little closer to you. Yes. There. Isn't that nice?
Oh, that perfume you're wearing, it makes me all...
It's called smoldering fire.
Gosh, it's hot in the car.
You're a very attractive man, Phil.
Please, that perfume smoldering fire. The smoke's getting in my eyes.
What's the matter, Phil? Can't you take it?
I don't want it. Please. Don't sit so close to me. That perfume, smoldering fire. Please, I'm a lawyer, not a fireman.
Philzy, you're just pretending not to like me. Look at my eyes. What do you see in my eyes?
What do I see? A cop on a motorcycle.
What?
A cop on a motorcycle. Oh, no, I wasn't going too fast.
You certainly weren't.
Answer the phone, Higgins.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't dream of letting you answer it, Mrs. Roberts. Hello?
Police department calling. Is this Higgins?
Yes. Have you caught them?
Yeah, they're locked up in a cell right now. The guy put up quite a fight.
Oh, fine. Splendid. Wonderful. I'll be right down. Goodbye.
Hey, just a minute.
Higgins? Who was that on the phone? Oh, my goodness. Why did he run out like that? Hello?
Hello, missus. This is the police. Your butler, Higgins, just run off without finding out where we got the prisoners.
Police? Prisoners?
Sure, he had us pick them up. Mr. Roberts and some dame he was running away with. Eloping. They're at the Green Acres station.
Philip? Running away with a woman? My Philip? Oh!
My word, officer. Why didn't you tell me where you had Miss Nancy and Pudgy?
Well, you hung up too fast. Well, we got your romantic couple safe and sound.
I'm certainly grateful to you for stopping them before anything had happened.
I'll turn them over to you now, but you better watch out. That guy was ready to fight anybody.
He was?
Yeah, but the dame thought it was funny. She even told me she thought I was a real cute cop.
A cute cop? Oh, yes, you are, of course, indeed, yes. Nancy said that?
Okay, lovebird, you're out.
I'll sue somebody for false arrest. I'll speak to the mayor. I'll wire the governor.
My word, Pudge's voice has finally changed.
Oh, Phil, why get so excited?
Higgins, you had the nerve to come down here after what you did to me?
What were you doing in the car?
Never mind what I was doing in the car. What's the idea of having Miss Armbruster and me arrested?
Miss Armbruster?
Higgins, don't just repeat my question. Explain what you've done.
Oh, I'm not sure I can explain it to myself, sir.
Well, perhaps this will give you a clue.
Yes.
The officer here said you had us arrested because we were eloping.
Oh, no, sir. That's silly. That's stupid. I called to have Miss Nancy and Master Pudgy arrested.
What for?
They were eloping.
Nancy, eloping? Married to that halibut?
Mr. Roberts, really, sir, we're not positive Miss Nancy did marry Pudgy.
Who needs proof? The thought is gruesome enough.
Stop pushing.
Get in there. We'll see what the sergeant thinks of your story.
Pudgy, delivered into my hands by fate.
Mr. Roberts. Oh, no. Quick, officer. Lock me up, please.
Stand back, everybody. All I want to do is place my hands carefully around his throat and squeeze until I'm shaking hands with myself.
Oh. You want to hear the charge against this boy?
I wasn't doing nothing.
Shut up and let the officer speak.
Yes, sir.
He was in a jewelry store with a young woman. He looked at rings and they both tried one on.
Oh, thank heaven. Then she didn't marry him, did she?
We never got a chance.
Where's Miss Nancy now?
Outside.
After they tried them on, this guy only had $1.50.
All he had to do was give the rings back.
Yes, sir. But this guy here couldn't get his off.
My fingers are kind of pudgy.
Fat is the word. Oh. And so is your head. Where's Nancy? Nancy! Who are you? this is what you do when my back is turned. Run off to marry a... To marry a...
A codfish, sir.
Codfish!
Daddy, please, we didn't get married.
Perhaps we should go home, Mr. Roberts.
And I've got to go, Phil. I'm sorry about it.
Don't anyone get near me. Pudgy, come here.
Daddy, don't you touch Pudgy. It wasn't his fault.
Can I say something?
No.
Sorry.
Pudgy, don't you ever come near Nancy again. I advise you to leave town.
But I'm so young to go out on my own.
Daddy, please.
Mr. Roberts, please, sir, stop and think a moment, sir. There must be a silver lining to this dilemma.
Silver lining?
After all, sir, Mrs. Roberts doesn't know a thing about it.
I don't care. Yes. Yes, that's right. All I need is for her to show up, and then...
Philip.
Oh.
Philip. Oh, Philip.
Oh, Elizabeth.
Oh, Nancy.
Oh, Pudgy.
Oh, dear.
Oh, nuts.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
Philip, this woman, is this the blonde cocker spaniel?
Well.
Yes. No. That is.
Really, Philip? I had no idea you had such a young mother.
Well.
Higgins, take Miss Armbrister home in a cab.
Oh, thank goodness.
And the rest of you in the car.
What about me in the ring?
I'll guarantee payment on the ring, officer. Better yet, I'll return it with a finger if I need to. Now get in the car, everybody. Well, just don't stand there, Higgins. Take Miss Armbrister home in a cab.
Come on, Higgins.
Mr. Roberts.
Well, what's the matter?
She's your client, sir.
Go ahead, Higgins.
If you say so, sir, but I'm not at all sure how I'll get along with Cocker Spaniels.
Well, Philip, explain, please.
Nancy was eloping with Pudgy.
Nancy? Eloping with Pudgy?
We didn't, though, Mrs. Roberts.
Oh, Nancy, how could you?
So, you see, Higgins had the car stopped to stop them, and he stopped me.
I'm sorry, Mother. I didn't really mean to do it. But Daddy was so mean last night.
Me? Mean? Oh, Nancy, you say that after all I've done for you, all the money we spent to send you to school and bring you up right...
You leave that poor child alone, Philip. Oh, Nancy.
Oh, Mother.
You've ruined our whole family. Are you satisfied?
Oh, Daddy, don't say that to me.
I was saying it to him.
Me? What did I do?
What about the woman, Philip? The client you said was a man.
I never said she was a man, dear. You did.
You didn't correct me.
Well, you know how you hate to have me correct you.
What about the Cocker Spaniel?
Gee whiz, we don't have a Cocker Spaniel.
She's talking to me.
When did we get a Cocker Spaniel?
We didn't.
Was that blonde hair from a Cocker Spaniel?
Let's get back to Nancy and her elopement. That's the serious thing.
No, let Mother change the subject.
Yeah, I go along with that.
You keep your mouth shut.
Don't you dare to talk to me like that.
I wasn't talking to you. I was talking to him. His mouth is hanging open again.
How could you run off with a woman like that?
I think Nancy's swell.
Nobody was running off. It was strictly business.
Then Pudgy doesn't love me.
A married man with three children running off with another woman.
Pudgy, three children, huh?
Now stop this crying before I turn you over my knee and spank you. You're not too old for it, you know.
Now he wants to beat a poor helpless woman.
Beat me? Oh, Pudgy, you're a beast.
Who said anything about beating anybody?
I did, and be quiet or I'll include you.
There, you admit you threatened to beat me.
I do not.
Oh, now you're lying about it.
Men, they're all alike.
Don't you put me in a class with Pudgy.
Gee whiz, a fellow doesn't have to put up with being insulted.
Tell me the truth. Were you running away?
No.
Yes.
Then admit it.
I did not say that.
Then it's two against one.
Nancy, I want to warn you. If you ever try to elope again without my permission, I'll...
What about that copper spaniel?
What about this ring on my finger?
What about the dollar you borrowed from me, Pudgy?
Well, I'm glad to see everything's all straightened out. Any questions?
What about the ring?
Now, Elizabeth, you see how simple the whole thing is, dear. Do you understand now?
Perfectly, dear. Everything's all straightened out.
That's good. I'm glad you understand the whole mix-up so perfectly.
Oh, I do, dear. Now sit down here next to me.
Yes, Elizabeth. And everything's forgotten.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Now, what about that blonde cocker spaniel?
Oh, no. Oh, excuse me, Elizabeth. I'll see who that is.
Good evening, sir.
Higgins, that dog.
Yes, sir. Blonde cocker spaniel with very long, silky hair. But
a cocker spaniel?
Yes, madam. Lovely dog. Miss Armbruster gave it to Mr. Roberts, since the animal was so fond of him and jumped all over him at the office yesterday.
Oh, then there was a cocker spaniel all the time.
Yes. Naturally. Isn't that what I said?
Oh, Philip, forgive me. Come here.
Oh, there. There, Elizabeth. Let's not get all emotional about how sorry we are about what we thought about our husband.
All right, dear. Mm-hmm. Excuse me now. I'll go get dinner ready.
Higgins?
Sir? Oh, he likes you, sir.
Yes. Yes, yes, he does. Higgins, where did you get that dog?
No, it was nothing, sir. Sort of thing butlers do all the time, sir.
Where did you get it?
You'll get the bill tomorrow, sir, at the office.
Higgins, you rascal. But what took you so long getting home?
Well, you see, sir, I couldn't get a cab, sir.
Higgins, come here.
Yes, sir.
What's that on your collar? My goodness, you're wounded.
Wounded, sir?
Higgins, that's lipstick.
Yes, sir. And I'm proud to report I got it in the line of duty, sir.
This has been It's Higgins, Sir, a new comedy series starring Harry McNaughton.
It's Higgins, Sir, on Tuned to Yesterday, an August 21st, 1951 broadcast from NBC. You're listening to an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. And now the concluding broadcast of a series created by Fibber McGee and Molly writer Don Quinn. It's The Halls of Ivy. Though Quinn was a master of wordplay and wrote for several different shows, most notably Fibber McGee and Molly, he had always dreamed of creating an academic comedy. And when movie actor Ronald Colman with wife Benita agreed to the series, it was a great success, though short-lived. On the air from January 6, 1950, through this broadcast, turned on June 25, 1952.
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Colman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Colman.
And Benita Colman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College. And now, The Halls of Ivy.
That surround us here today, and we will not forget though we be far, far away.
Welcome again to Ivy,
Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. Dr. William Todd Underhall, president of Ivy, starts this week on his vacation, accompanied, need we say, by his charming wife, Victoria. And here in his administration building office, metaphorically putting up the shutters, cutting off the utilities, and stopping the milk delivery for the summer, we find Dr. Hall and his secretary, the indispensable Miss Goodson.
Well, let's finish up, Miss Goodson, before we have another influx of bon voyage visitors and footloose professors. Now, is there anything else before I shoulder my knapsack and wander off through Bug and Fen?
There are two letters to sign, Dr. Hall.
Only two? That's splendid. For me to get through the college year as a two-letter man is quite an achievement. Which two are they?
One of them is a personal note to Mr. Wolfe of Business Administration, who left us to go with an advertising agency in New York.
And the three times the salary we could give him, I'm happy to say. With his energy and personality, he'll make a fine... what is the term?
Huckster.
Oh, yes. Probably from the Middle English word huckle, meaning haunch. Because destiny seems to have shaped his ends for an executive chair. And the other letter?
To Professor Alvin Weingand of the English Department, congratulating him on his new publication called What's a Good Word?
Ah, yes, a real contribution to the living language. Professor Weingand advocates a positive approach to popular usage.
My mother always took a negative approach. She used to tell me always to remember that the only word which occurs naturally in the English alphabet is N-O, no.
Well, I salute Mother Goodson. All right, now I'll sign the letters. Where is my my fountain pen?
It's being repaired, sir, at that little side street shop in Ivy.
Oh.
You always say that while the proprietor may be slow, you rather like his nibs.
One priceless witticism for a $1 repair job. It takes 3 weeks. Now, let me see. The Wolf letter. There we are. And the Weingand letter. That's that. And now what, Miss Goodson?
That's all, sir. You're through. I'll take care of anything else that needs doing. Your traveler's checks, road maps, and motor club material are in this envelope. I hope you and Mrs. Hall have a lovely summer, sir.
Thank you. And in this envelope, you will find a small contribution toward your summer, Miss Goodson.
Thank you, sir.
And I thank whatever powers may be who watch over college presidents for sending me such a flawless secretary. And now, will you call Mrs. Hall and tell her I'm on my way?
She knows, sir. I called her while you were talking to Professor Heaslip. I said you'd be home in 45 minutes. You have a full 12 minutes to make it.
Oh, you're home.
Uh-huh.
I hope you folded your overalls neatly and left your lunch bucket in the locker and punched the time clock right in the nose.
Yes, I even had Miss Goodson disconnect the electric clock in my office, thus saving the college at least 11 cents in electricity over the summer.
This is an idea from far left field, but a stop clock somehow reminds me of Mr. Willman.
It does. Why?
Because even a stopped clock is right twice a day in spite of itself. Well, the observation isn't original with me, of course, but... Yeah, oh, speaking of time, aren't you home rather earlier than you'd hoped?
Yes, and we'd have finished much sooner, except for several professors who dropped in to wish a happy summer.
Oh, when Miss Goodson called, she said you were deep in conversation with Professor Heaslip.
Deep is the proper term. Mm. 40 fathoms at least. Heaslip, as you know, fancies himself a Shakespearean scholar. And I suspect dreams of himself playing Hamlet in doublet and tights.
Professor Heaslip in tights is not a dream, Toddy. It's a nightmare.
Yes, and it's regrettable that with a voice like Sir Henry Irving, he should have a figure like Sidney Greenstreet.
Well, I'd have said Lou Costello, but between Greenstreet and Costello, you can split the difference. And also the tights.
Well, Heaslip has a new parlor game. Designed, I think, for literary show-offs and intellectual snobs. I did quite well at it.
Well, go ahead, snob darling, and show off for me. What's the game?
Well, I don't know that it has a name as yet, but it might be called Here's Your Hat and Quote. or Block That Reference. The idea is that your opponent indicates a nearby object or suggests a brief situation, and you must counter immediately with a Shakespearean quotation, giving the source.
Oh, you mean if you say Heaslip, I snap right back with... They have been at the great feast of languages and stolen the scraps. Love, labor, lost, act four.
That's it, exactly. And very good, Vicky, if I may say so.
Well, thank you. I'm all tuckered out now.
I must confess, I was quite carried away with the game.
I'd like to hear you two play it sometime. Maybe I could enjoy seeing Professor Heaslip carried away. Give me some more samples.
Well, I pointed to that plaster bust of myself that one of our art students made a few years ago, and Heaslip promptly said, "Why should a man whose blood is warm within sit like his grandsire cut in alabaster?" Merchant of Venice, Act One.
Not bad. Then what did he give you?
Well, he indicated a small puddle where the water cooler had leaked. So I said, "Great floods have flown from simple sources. All's well that ends well."
That's brilliant, darling. I bet you can beat Heaslip hands down at his own game.
Well, my final triumph was a bit fraudulent, I'm afraid. As he was leaving, he said, "Man bites dog." And I said, the biter bit, 'tis only just, it is a bitter bite. Coriolanus, Act Three.
Well, it's marvelous. Coriolanus? I don't remember that line.
No, dear. I invented it for my own nefarious purposes. And Heaslip didn't challenge it. He was obviously afraid it would expose his own ignorance. But enough about that, my sweet. How have you occupied yourself today?
Oh, packing, repacking, calling up about the lights and the gas and the water, cleaning out the refrigerator, and fighting bees.
Bees in the refrigerator? Well, I must say, you're a thrifty little helpmeet, raising your own honey. Don't your bees get a trifle lethargic at freezing temperatures?
They weren't my bees.
Oh, borrowed bees. Well, it's a novel touch of neighborliness. I say, William, will you run next door to the Quincannons and borrow a cup of bees?
Oh, William, the bees weren't in the refrigerator.
Oh.
They were swarming in that big old oak tree out in front, and a lot of them got into the house.
And how did the beautiful and ingenious Mrs. Hall cope with the matter?
Oh, the clever Mrs. Hall's first thought was to run screaming out of the back door. The second thought, the fly swatter. Third and best thought, our natural history department. And they sent a man over who lured them away with a queen bee.
Girl crazy, hmm? And after coming in the house and seeing you, Vicky, I can't blame them.
Well, thank you. And I don't remember that Shakespeare said anything apropos of that situation.
Oh, yes, he did. Yes. Midsummer Night's Dream. Lord, what bees these mortals fool. You see, there's a slight transposition necessary, yes. You understand.
But yeah, it, you explain it to me sometime,
will,
you know.
Excuse me, darling. Dr. Hall speaking. Hello, Professor Warren. Well, thank you, Joe. Well, I was a little hurt, a parade of professors through my office this afternoon, and no Joe Warren. But what are your plans, Professor? You are, and you got your license this afternoon. Good for you. Well, thank you for calling, and we'll see you next fall. Bye, Joe.
Professor Warren, you got a license? What, not marriage?
No, dear, fishing.
Oh.
Oh, he says he's going up into some remote part of Canada for the summer. I wonder why...
What's the matter, darling?
It's just occurred to me that... Oh, well, they're probably busy packing, too. Although it does seem that one or two of them might have... Oh, but maybe they tried, and I was too involved with Heaslip. Still...
William, what on earth are you trying to say? Who might have tried to do what?
Well, Vicky, do you realize that not a single student has called on me or telephoned to say goodbye or good luck?
Oh, Toddy, I don't really think that means anything.
Did any of them call here while I was gone?
No, but...
Well, that's even stranger. They consider you practically one of them. I, being the president, might be considered too aloof to be the object of such intimacies, although I have tried to maintain really now, don't you think it odd?
Well, yes. Oh, but darling, maybe they don't realize we're leaving today.
Well, Vicky, I mentioned it in chapel yesterday morning.
Oh, well, don't worry about it. My goodness, they all love you and you know it. Come on now. Now, what did the other William have to say about that?
What, about falsely assuming a personal popularity? Well, now, let me see. Yes, yes, there's the speech in Measure for Measure. But man, proud man, dressed in a little brief authority, most ignorant of what he's most assured. His glassy essence, like an angry ape, plays such fantastic tricks before high heaven as make the angels weep.
Thank you.
As we return to the halls of Ivy, we find Dr. Hall just coming back from loading the last suitcase, tennis racket, sunglasses, camp stove, and reading material into the car.
I think that does it, Vicky. And from the looks of the back seat, the rear deck, and the glove compartment, we are thoroughly equipped for a 3-year safari through darkest Wyoming. Are you ready to leave?
Yeah, I think so. Let me check my list again. Now then, let's see. 64, 66. Item 67.
67? What, may I ask, is the total number of your memoranda?
Well, in round numbers, 88. Oh. Those are about the roundest numbers I could think of, so I... But item 67 says, don't forget BB. What do you suppose I meant by that?
BB? Couldn't mean just BBs, because I'm not taking my air rifle. A bundle of blankets? A box of biscuits? Bread and butter? Stop me if I'm getting warm. Barrel of bicarbonate? Bait for barracuda? Bank book?
Yeah, that's it, thank you.
Well, why do we need that? Considering that I've drawn practically all our available funds in the form of traveler's checks, the bank book would merely be an unhappy reminder of better days. Yeah,
not the bank book, Toddy. Your bird book.
Oh.
Do you remember last time we took a long trip and you'd see a purple-billed swamp goonie or something? And you'd go simply mad trying to identify it.
Yes, yes. And thank you for remembering. Where is the book?
Oh, it's in the car. I loaded it first thing so I wouldn't forget.
My darling, I don't know what I should do without you, and I hope I never find out. Well, is your list all checked off?
Yes, I think that's everything. Now, if you'll wait while I put on my face...
Wait. Did I hear the telephone?
No, but if it had rung, you would have, because you're practically sitting on it.
Thought I felt it ring.
Toddy, you're not so worrying about not hearing from the students.
Well, no, not worrying exactly, but I do think it's strange that none of them called.
Well, it's probably some very simple explanation, but we're both such complicated characters, we can't think of it.
Well, last year, for instance, we were besieged by youngsters and their friendly farewells.
William.
I can't think what I may have done or not done. I've chided them now and then, yes, but I've also consulted them.
William.
Helped them.
Toddy.
Advised them.
Darling.
And to leave for the summer without a... Yes, Vicky?
Look. I won't consider spending the summer with a college president who's brooding about not being played off the campus with a string quartet.
Oh, my love, it's not that.
And I don't want to have you running out of gasoline because you forgot to fill the tank because you were wondering why the senior class didn't line up on the front porch to kiss us goodbye.
All right, and if you're referring to the time we, or I rather, ran out of gasoline in our little rented English car in Devon, was it Devon?
Oh, yes. What a lovely day it was to run out of petrol. But then you always thought of the nicest things to do.
I still remember the red sandstone cliffs and the surf and the seagulls scolding us for the intrusion. Miss Cromwell.
Yes, Mr. Hall?
I am an American. My entire family were pioneer Americans. Mayflower. The revolution, if you'll pardon the reference. I am proud of my American heritage, but I regret to inform you that being unused to English automobiles with their smaller fuel capacity, we are out of gasoline.
Oh, well, I don't think Parliament will call a special meeting about it. Besides, when you think that part of the Spanish Armada was wrecked near here after storms and scurvy and hunger, why, running out of petrol seems a little trivial, doesn't it?
Yes, particularly as we passed a village not 2 miles back. Or is it kilometers? Or shillings?
Oh, well, let's just call it a brisk walk. May I come with you?
May you? Oh, but I warn you, with you the walk will not be brisk. I shall prolong the journey to the point of dawdling.
Well, you've known me so briefly that you probably don't realize that I'm a girl guide.
You are?
Yet with 3 merit badges for dawdling, sauntering, and meandering.
And I am an Eagle Scout who has just laid an egg as a motorist. Miss Crumble, will you do me the honor of accompanying me to yon hamlet, whatever it might be called?
Oh, I'd love to, Mr. Hall. And the name of the village is Appledore.
Thank you, girl guide. You know, I still feel slightly apprehensive about leaving a car parked on what is to me the wrong side of the road. Do Americans ever get accustomed to using the left side of the street?
Well, I think they rather enjoy it. Why, I've always heard that the American attitude toward oncoming traffic was, let's face it. Well, look, suppose we take a shortcut across this nice, fat meadow.
All right. Ah, what lovely country this is. Every part of your England seems to have its own particular brand of beauty.
I imagine America does, too. But beauty is in the eye of the beholder, they say. Why are you staring at me?
Oh, I guess I'm just a beholder with beauty in my eye. You are beautiful, you know. I never realized how rosy your cheeks were.
Well, you're looking at me through the rose-colored glasses of Devon. Why, everything around here is rosy. The cliffs, the apples, the deer, and even the sheep have a reddish tinge.
Yes, and look at the fuchsias outside that cottage.
Yes.
I don't know how science accounts for this rosy aspect, but I have a theory which explains it to my satisfaction.
Well, science is always so impersonal. I think I'm going to like your theory better. What is it?
Well, my theory, to account for the local pinkness, is that your presence raises the blood pressure of the countryside to such an extent that the result is a breathtaking blush.
Oh.
Did you say the name of that village is Apple Cheek?
No, it's Apple Door. And I must warn you, this part of the coast is to be taken very seriously. They say from Padstow Point to Lundy Light is a watery grave by day or night.
Yes, as witness the Spanish Armada.
Yes.
Miss Cromwell, Victoria.
Yes, William?
Do you think you would like America?
Why? But what an odd question. I'm sure I would, but why do you...
Oh, just keep it in mind and think it over. I may have another question, a more or less related question to ask you on
the... telephone, darling.
No, not on the telephone. Darling, did you call me darling? Miss Trumbull, are you...
William, hurry! It's the telephone, onto the phone.
How could a telephone ring way out here? Oh, the telephone.
Oh,
yes.
I'm sorry to bring you back from wherever you were, darling. You had such a blissful expression on your face.
Well, I was in Devon with you, and a happier combination never existed, at least until you married me.
Maybe it's a student.
Oh. Dr. Hall's residence. Yes, who? Archie Scott, a sophomore, yes?
See what I tell you.
I see, Mr. Scott. No, I'm sorry. I'm making no further appointments. I'm leaving on my vacation, as I announced in chapel yesterday. You'd forgotten that. I see. Hmm. Well, I'd suggest you see your faculty advisor. Yes, goodbye.
Well, no good luck and Godspeed?
No, the young man wanted to consult me about a change of courses. He'd heard me announce our departure, but it has slipped his mind. Mind. I use the word so loosely, it is in danger of falling out of the sentence.
You must not be bitter, dear. Now, here's your hat, here are the keys to the car, and my number one faculty row. Cheer up, Toddy. We're on our way. Now, wave goodbye to Wellman Hall. It won't wave back, but no Wellman has time for little frivolities.
I'm sorry, my darling. It was just the thought of departing without a friendly pat on the head from at least one student.
William, look. What's going on? Road's blocked off ahead.
Hey there. What's the matter? Something wrong?
It's him. It's Dr. Hall. Yes, Dr. Hall, there is something wrong.
What is it, Jimmy? What's wrong?
Well, the art department was making up a beautiful scroll for us to wish you a wonderful summer and thanks for everything, but some idiot spilled a bottle of ink over it. We talked him out of shooting himself. I don't know why. But all we could do then was stop you on your way and say goodbye.
Oh. Well, thank you. Thank you all very much.
You just kept Dr. Hall from shooting himself, too.
Well, I haven't got a speech ready, Dr. Hall and Mrs. Hall, but speaking for everybody in this academy of yours, I can say we wish you a wonderfully happy vacation, and if you've got room for it among your luggage, you're taking the affectionate regards of everybody with you. Take care of yourselves, because we'll need you in September. May we sing you on your way, sir?
Oh, you may indeed. And thank you again.
Not too good now, or we may decide to stay.
Okay, everybody. The Ivy alma mater. For a couple of friends.
Oh, we love.
William, didn't Shakespeare have a word about this?
Oh, yes, my love. In The Tempest, remember? Our revels now are ended. These, our actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherit, shall dissolve. And like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Good night.
The Halls of Ivy, on Tuned to Yesterday from June 25th, 1952 on NBC, wrapping up their two-year-long series. And that wraps up this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.